The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents.
We love the
Normal Show Live. Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Wednesday, September 29th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live from Rolla J Studios here in beautiful Potland, Oregon. And in our second hour, we will also be talking with you on our Toker Talk Radio, our second hour, which is not part of the podcast. But before we get to all of that, let's talk to our engineer, the board op, my good friend, Ganja John.
What up, Russ?
Hey, man. The Ducks are playing in Autzen this Saturday.
They are. ESPN Game Day is going to be there. They're playing against number 9, Stanford. They're number 5, right?
Yeah, number 4, I think.
Number 4, yeah.
Yeah, so everybody's pointing to Oregon playing number 9 and Alabama playing number 7, and they're all complaining that Boise State's playing New Mexico State. Hey, man, we'll play anybody.
It'll be a blowout. So,
we'll play anybody that schedules us. It's just nobody will schedule us. Also joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, my good friend and quarter sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hello, boys.
I've decided to go with quarter sister because too many people were misinterpreting half sister as half-assed sister, and that's not at all true.
Half-assed sister.
Yeah. That's right. Carrie doesn't do anything half-assed, let me tell you about that. Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break. So what's in the news today?
Well, we revisit the Iowa Pharmacy Board today and find out what their decision was yesterday in a very important meeting for Iowa medical marijuana. An unfortunate shooting, another shooting in a drug search warrant. Fortunately, nobody died in this case, but two people came pretty close. And also, we're going to go to a Utah politician. He's actually an ex-politician that gave a great speech back in 2000 about legalizing drugs. We're going to hear what he has to say in 2010.
All right. Looking forward to that, especially considering, state of Utah. That's some great news. Also, there was some news out of San Diego where Jovan Jackson, who'd been previously acquitted as a dispensary owner for selling marijuana, was convicted yesterday by a different judge for the same charge. We'll talk about that later on in the show as well. Also coming up on today's show, we've got your Daily Toker Tunes. It's Irie Wednesday, so we'll play the best in world and reggae music. We've got Andrew Tosh, the son of Peter Tosh, and Bunny Whaler on today's tune, so it should be a good one. At half past the hour, we're going to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, America's leading researcher on cannabis and culture. He will be available for your live questions via chat or live call-in, so stay tuned for that in our cannabis science segment. And at the end of the show, a little bit of radical ranting about the medical marijuana states and some of the ways people are trying to exploit loopholes in medical marijuana laws to sell marijuana. All that and more, plus in our second hour, Toker Talk Radio, we'll talk about police abuse of a medical marijuana patient with multiple sclerosis here in Oregon. Stick around. We're right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
We'll be right back.
arrested? Need a lawyer? Call the Normal Legal Committee for an attorney near you. Find one at norml.org. Remember, attorneys are cheaper than a lifelong criminal drug record.
It's that freedom. Freedom. I'm free to do whatever.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carry.
The Iowa Pharmacy Board attempted to send the medical marijuana issue back to legislatures in hopes that they would reclassify marijuana in a way that would allow it to be used for legitimate medical purposes yesterday. The journey of medical marijuana for Iowa began last February in the non-ballot initiative state. Legislative leaders initially said they would consider legalizing medical marijuana in Iowa, but then later declared that Iowa code already gives the state pharmacy board authority to set up a medical marijuana program. The pharmacy board has been considering the issue of legalized medical marijuana for the state for some time, but yesterday it unanimously rejected a request that it write rules allowing marijuana to be used for medical purposes. Margaret Whitworth, a board member from Cedar Rapids, said at the time that the appointed body of the pharmacy board are not elected officials and should not be writing law. The seven-member board said the issue should be considered by a broad group of experts put together by the legislature. Board Chairman Vernon Benjamin said the small group is too narrow of a group to make a rule that would impact the state to such a great degree. Representative Kevin McCarthy, the Democratic House Majority Leader, said that lawmakers are unlikely to fulfill the pharmacy board's request during the next year's legislative session, saying, quote, "I don't think either the majority or the minority party, whichever that may be, will spend a lot of time on the issue of medical marijuana," unquote. It was McCarthy who said last February that legislative leaders would appoint a committee to study the possibility of allowing marijuana for medical purposes. However, he later concluded that such a committee was unnecessary because of a decades-old clause in Iowa law giving the pharmacy board authority to write rules allowing medical marijuana. McCarthy struck by that conclusion even after the pharmacy board decided they would not consider it yesterday, saying that what the board is asking for, they as legislatures have already done. One medical marijuana advocate, Carl Olson of Des Moines, said that after the ruling today, he would continue to press the matter. He feels the pharmacy board does not have the legal discretion to ignore the Iowa code section saying the board would not make rules allowing medical marijuana and saying the actions of the pharmacy yesterday was breaking the law. He is considering appealing the matter to the courts where he could ask a judge to order the board to action. Up until recently, the pharmacy board had mostly heard from medical marijuana supporters and advocates on the issue, but recently the board admitted that they have received numerous emails and letters from medical marijuana opponents, including law enforcement officers and addiction treatment counselors. The meeting yesterday was attended by both groups, the usual medical marijuana supporters and a new group of people wearing no medical marijuana buttons. Jennifer Hussman, the project coordinator of the group Jones County for Safe and Healthy Youth, was there telling media that decisions about which drugs should be allowed in Iowa should not only be made by professionals and not a popular opinion. She added the new prescription medications would soon be on the market that would provide the same types of relief without the dangers of marijuana. Now, a February poll in the state showed that 64% of Iowans support medical marijuana and 70% oppose outright legalization.
Yeah, this is the kind of backlash I've been warning people against, that soon enough the pharmaceuticalization of cannabis is going to lead to all sorts of patent medications that give the same relief that cannabis does, just without that pesky high. And, you know, your ability to grow it yourself and maintain your own health cheaply and easily, right? You'll be paying a whole lot, you know, markup. You know, the markup on a typical pill in the pharmaceutical industry is anywhere from like 20,000% to 250,000% compared to what it costs for them to make it. You can bet they'll do the same thing with cannabis. As far as the Iowa goes here, it just looks like all these politicians are playing hot potato with this. Oh, pharmacy board, you guys figure out if there's medical. Oh, no, legislature, you figure it out. No, no, you guys have to figure it out, because they know it's an enormously popular 64% support there in Iowa. And of course, all throughout the Midwest, we get numbers above the 60s into the 70% range support for medical marijuana. They know they're on the losing side of this issue. They're just trying to run the clock out until the pharmaceuticalization comes in.
A Utah ex-politician has given hopes to marijuana advocates in the country's most conservative state. It was 10 years ago during the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles that Rocky Anderson made headlines in his home state. Back in 2000, Anderson, who was then the Salt Lake City's mayor, gave a controversial and passionate speech where he said the war against drugs just isn't working. He stopped just short of calling for an all-out legalization. Since Rocky Anderson's speech, a dozen states have now approved the use of medical marijuana, and California voters are voting whether to legalize marijuana for adults. Anderson told Utah's ABC News outlet on Monday that to put people behind bars for possessing or smoking marijuana is absolutely absurd. He said that it would make more sense to jail people for smoking cigarettes. 10 years ago, Anderson was criticized sharply for saying America's drug laws needed to change because they are expensive and ineffective. Not only has Anderson become more outspoken in his home state about the dangers of prohibition, he sees now that marijuana will be legal all over the country someday soon, even in Utah. He thinks Utah voters will someday take a good look at the issue and realize that it just doesn't make sense. Now, while he didn't come out and say it in his 2000 convention speech, he was asked again if he would vote for legalizing marijuana for all adults. And he replied, quote, "Yes, I absolutely think marijuana should be legalized." This forward-thinking politician from Utah also added that back in 1996, he came out in favor of gay marriage as well. Looks like Rocky Anderson was right on both counts.
Yeah, that's good news to hear from Rocky Anderson, the former mayor of Salt Lake City. Yeah, people are starting to come to their senses, even in Utah, even in conservative areas of the country, where they don't necessarily like the idea of legalization. They don't like the idea of people smoking pot, but they can no longer deny that what we're doing now isn't working and causing more problems, more violence, and more danger than if we tried any other approach.
A pregnant, unarmed woman was shot during a raid in Spokane, Washington last Friday while Spokane County officers were serving a search warrant. A Washington State Patrol detective sergeant shot the woman, who was 39 weeks pregnant, and investigators are still trying to piece together what happened while the woman remains hospitalized. The shooting is being investigated by the sheriff's office along with members of the Spokane Police Department and the Washington State Patrol. A sheriff's office spokesman, Sergeant Dave Reagan, confirms that no weapons were found in the home, but he did say they found drugs, crack cocaine, marijuana, and some controlled prescription medications. The victim's mother has come out in defense of her daughter and says that there were no drugs or weapons in the home. According to officers, the woman inside the apartment became non-compliant with the officer's instructions and then made an attempt to flee out a bedroom window. The police are saying that during efforts to prevent her escape, a shot was fired and the woman suffered a wound to her upper torso. After being shot, the woman fell out of the window and received first aid from officers stationed at the back of the apartment building. Sergeant Reagan offered no further details about why detectives use deadly force, which the officers are trained to use only if they believe their lives are in danger. No further explanation on why the detective who fired the shot, believed to be threatened by a fleeing, pregnant, unarmed woman attempting to escape out a window where officers were waiting. Tension at the apartment complex ran high for hours following the shooting of the victim as family arrived home and learned of the gunfire shots. The woman's mother was heard screaming at the scene, quote, "They shot an unarmed pregnant lady for no reason." The woman, who was just a week or two away from delivery, had experienced labor pains on Thursday night, just hours before the shooting occurred. A next-door neighbor who was home during the incident said that neither she nor her stepson heard officers yell any commands before the shooting, but they loudly heard the gunshot and the woman screaming after she was shot. An unconfirmed report by the woman's family say that labor was induced at a local hospital and the woman gave birth to a son over the weekend. Friday's shooting involved members of the multi-agency Quad City Drug Task Force, which investigates drug dealing in Lewiston, Clarkston, Moscow, and Pullman. And although the victim hasn't been publicly identified, the detective who fired the shot is 25-year veteran Lee Slemp, age 54. He is on paid administrative leave, which is standard procedure in an officer shooting.
Yeah, a story like this, we'll hear about, you know, cops bursting in the doors with search warrants to go after drugs and drug users and end up shooting an unarmed pregnant woman, you know, because I guess they wouldn't have been able to chase after her fast enough. She'd have probably outrun them, right? Those little donut-eating cops. But, yeah, we get a story like this, and the reaction that we'll get here is two things. They'll say, well, we're just doing our job. And number two, oh, well, it was a mistake. It was a drug bust gone awry or something like that. never looking at the root cause of the mistake in the first place. The mistake can't happen if you're not sending armed thugs to invade citizens' homes over their personal use of drugs. That's as simple as I can put it. All right, I got a fourth story here to bring up that I just had to address this one myself, and it's the conviction that we heard of last night after the show of Jovan Jackson. Now, Jovan Jackson is a California medical marijuana dispensary owner, or at least he was. The dispensary is no longer in business. According to San Diego Six, the former manager of the now-defunct medical marijuana dispensary was convicted Tuesday of selling the drug for profit to undercover officers. Jovan Jackson, himself a medical marijuana patient, was found guilty of three felony counts, including possession for sale of marijuana. Jackson faces more than 6 years behind bars at his sentencing on October 27th. After a day of deliberations, a jury found that Jackson twice last year sold marijuana to undercover officers from his Amsterdam alternative care in Kearney Mesa. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is because you may recognize the name Jovan Jackson. We did a story on him in 2009. Here was the situation in 2009. The district attorney in San Diego, Bonnie Domenes, who hates Prop 215, hates medical marijuana, and wants to overturn it by any means possible, Bonnie Domenes sent her cops undercover to go to a legitimate doctor, get a legitimate recommendation for medical, the use of medical marijuana, although we don't know whether the cop was lying about whatever ailment he needed to get that recommendation. But the cop gets the legitimate recommendation for medical marijuana. He goes to the legal dispensary collective that's being operated by Jackson. He buys a quarter ounce of marijuana. Based on that, they raid his dispensary. They find more of the evidence, the marijuana, the money. They take him to court. A jury of 12 of his peers is sat down. The judge instructs the jury that he is a medical marijuana provider. It goes to trial. And in 2009, a jury of 12 people found Jovan Jackson innocent, acquitted of all charges because he was a legal medical marijuana provider under Prop 215 and SB 420. So what happened this time? Well, Bonnie Domenes, who hates Prop 215, hates medical marijuana patients, is trying to overturn it by any means possible, got one of her undercover cops to go to a legitimate doctor, get a legitimate recommendation for medical marijuana. We don't know whether he lied about his condition or not. Go to the dispensary where he purchased a quarter ounce of marijuana from Jovan Jackson, which led to another raid of his dispensary where the cops gathered evidence, gathered money, gathered medical marijuana, and took it before a judge where 12 people were selected as a jury. But this time, it was a different judge. And this time, the judge said that he could not use the fact that he was a medical marijuana patient or dispensary provider as a defense in court. To which the prosecutors, in a story that I wrote up earlier this year, celebrated by giving each other high fives and hugs. And because the jury was instructed to not, or was not allowed to know that he was involved with medical marijuana or a medical marijuana dispensary, they had to consider that this guy was just some average Joe Blow with a storefront selling weed to people who would pay for it. And they convicted him. So to the people out there that are saying, wait a minute, isn't this double jeopardy in America? You can't try someone twice for the same crime. That's true. They didn't try him twice for the first raid. They tried him once for the first raid. And once for the second raid. And the second time, they rolled the dice and managed to get a judge that would be favorable to their point of view. This is why it is so critical to pass Prop 19 in the state of California. Because obviously Prop 215 and SB 420 didn't help Jovan Jackson worth a damn. But this part of Prop 19 would. Section 11303, seizure. Notwithstanding sections 11470 and 11479 of the Health and Safety Code or any other provision of law, no state or local law enforcement agency or official shall attempt to, threaten to, or in fact seize or destroy any cannabis plant, cannabis seeds, or cannabis that is lawfully cultivated, processed, transported, possessed for sale, sold, or used in compliance with this act or any other local government ordinance, law, or regulation adopted pursuant to this act. In other words, Bonnie Domenes' fishing expeditions to try to get the right judge who will deny a man a legal defense in court, those fishing expeditions are over. So for all of you people out there, the no on Prop 19 people, the Dragonfly De La Luzes, who tell us that marijuana is already legal in California because of Prop 215, tell that to Jovan Jackson and tell me why we should be voting against this section in the new law in Prop 19 that would forbid the Bonnie Domenes' and Steve Cooley's from going after medical marijuana patients by using local law enforcement and taxpayer resources to bust people who are legal marijuana patients.
Settle down, Russ.
My goodness. I think we better go to the happy place.
Pull the reins in a little bit.
Oh, slow down, Nelly. I'm sorry. It gets me mad.
It should.
We'll be back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The fact is today, people don't go to jail for possession of marijuana. I know you like to pretend it does, and there's a lot of misinformation about that. But finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn. You find one, you will make a big story because it doesn't exist. Finding somebody in jail or prison for a first-time nonviolent offender for possession of marijuana is like finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn, finding a unicorn.
Normal Show Live, the National Wildlife Refuge for Marijuana Unicorns.
I'm gonna light me a pipe of inspiration. I'm gonna blow away troubles from my head. I'm gonna leave this plastic place to your plastic jubilees. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place. And travel to a better place instead.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers in Des Moines, Iowa. America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, now available on iTunes and CD, baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 and a half after the hour, and no, Johnny Reefer Seed is not our music editor anymore. We are still looking for a music editor for Irie Wednesday to bring us the best in reggae, ska, calypso, Latin, and world music. Send your applications, which an application means find me some MP3 tunes, and send them to stash@normal.org, and we'll consider you for the position. Which is not to say we don't love Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers. We love Johnny Reefer Seed and the High Rollers. They're just busy.
We miss them.
We miss them, actually. But anyway, we got this great song that I pulled off the IOTA promo net. It's up at stash.normal.org right now. It's Andrew Tosh, who was born on June 19th, 1967 in Kingston, Jamaica, who seemed, of course, preordained for a life in music, being that his father was Peter Tosh of the Wailers. He used to sing all sorts of songs together with his father, not just the Peter Tosh songs, but also pop classics by the likes of Stevie Wonder, Ray Charles, and Kenny Rogers. Andrew notes that, quote, Peter always knew I would do something in the music business, so he encouraged me to study piano because he knew I loved it. From the start, it was inside me to sing and play instruments. I knew that my heartbeat was music, and one day it would just be music out of my mouth and writing and singing my own songs. This comes from the 7th studio album from Andrew Tosh, son of the late reggae singer and former Wailers member Peter Tosh. It's a 10-track opus that features covers of Peter Tosh's popular recordings, with special guests including Kaimani Marley and Bunny Wailer on this track entitled I Am.
I'm not in this world to live up to your expectations. Neither are you here to live up to mine. And I don't owe no one, no obligations. No one owe me none, so everything is fine. Said I am, but I am, I am, I am, I am.
I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I said I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. Don't underestimate my ability, and don't definite my character. I say don't belittle my authority. Now it's time you recognize my quality. I said I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I said I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. And it is full of outer quiddy. Whoa, yeah. I am that I am. I know I am. I said I am that I am. I am, I am, I am. I am that I am. I am, I am, I am. Yes. I am that I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I said I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I am that I am, I am, I am, I am. I'm the son of Moses, you cannot move by at all. I'm the son of David, you cannot move by at all. I am the son of Elijah, you cannot move by at all. I am the son of Peter, you can't move at all. Said you could have come with the easing, you cannot.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing Media, and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs, or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany and the author of Understanding Marijuana. Now here's your dose of cannabis science.
Welcome back, everyone. Half past the hour. We're getting Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line here. And Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back.
Now, I understand you'll be away from us next week.
I'll be at SUNY Binghamton talking about the evil weed and all the wonderful things it can do.
Now, you be careful. You know, they poisoned Socrates for spreading those kind of things to the youth, so...
I'll be careful what I drink while I'm there.
Okay. Hey, before we get started with the questions, I want to let everyone know, if you'd like to ask a question of Dr. Mitch Earlywine, you can call us at 971-533-7111. You can Skype in at Radical Russ, or you can just type your questions in the chat, and it helps if you put the word question in front of it in all caps so that Cannabis Carry can find it and post it up in the chat window for us. And also, if you want to get in on the chat room, you have to be a friend of the show. So go to stickum.com, create your account, and send a friend request to Normal Show Live. Those friend requests are automatically accepted, so you should be able to get in right immediately. So before we get to the questions, Dr. Mitch, I always like to give you time at the beginning of the segment to let folks know if there's any new studies or scientific information or stuff you'd like to let them know about this wonderful cannabis plant.
What's come out recently is some neuropsych data that essentially shows that a lot of the stuff we've heard before about folks who use cannabis but who aren't high at the time have these small deficits in learning and forgetting. But in fact, this is just really a product of motivation on these tasks. And so one of my students basically said, hey, guys, come on, help us do a good job here, and we'll change marijuana policy. And suddenly our cannabis users really perked right up and really kicked ass on the neuropsych test in that condition. And without that little addition in the instructions, they didn't do as well. So by all means, if anybody ever asks you to do a neuropsych test, if they know you're a cannabis user, give it all you got.
So is this a case where the power of suggestion is working against the cannabis users?
It's really funny because essentially you go in there without, you know, any real incentive to do well. And so what a surprise, you know, you do a good job, but you don't think, hey, I'm really representing everybody involved in the field here. And once you mention that that's part of the process, suddenly everybody really does a superb job on, you know, complicated things like memory and learning and things like that. And so I just want to make sure we all go into these kinds of things with all the motivation we've got.
Okay. We want to do well on those tests. So we got to show them that we're just as good as everybody else out there. We know it. They just need to know it at this point. Our first question comes from Destruction. It's kind of a silly question. But he wants to know if you've ever experienced the effects of a so-called gravity bong.
I have seen them demonstrated, but haven't actually used one myself. But I'm looking forward to the opportunity.
Is there any difference in inhaling the smoke off of that? Because, you know, for the folks that don't know what we're talking about, gravity bong is typically someone takes a 2-liter bottle and they submerge it in water, and then they make a bowl out of the cap, and when they pull the 2-liter bottle out of the water, the suction power of the physics of water and air there pulls air through the bowl and loads up this 2-liter bottle with smoke. And then as you push the 2-liter bottle back down, the smoke comes out the top and you inhale that smoke. Is there any difference really in the quality of that smoke as to whether or not you were just inhaling it straight off the bowl or whether you're getting it here from the gravity bong?
It's not that the smoke is any more potent or anything like that. It's that usually the size of the inhalation ends up being markedly larger than you would normally take on a bong yourself. And so you end up getting a little more THC into the lungs than you would under other circumstances.
Mm-hmm. You know, I also remember our discussions previously about, you know, the most effective and the safest ways to use cannabis. And we had this little chart we ran down from vaporizer to joint to pipe to bong. And one of the things you had mentioned when we talked about pipe inhalation is the heat, the hot air that's going into the lungs is no good. So perhaps could the gravity bong be beneficial in the fact that it'd be cooling down that smoke?
I'm getting reports that the subjective experience of the smoke is cooler. I want to emphasize that doesn't mean you have to hold it in longer. THC gets into the lungs and into the bloodstream pretty rapidly. There's no need to do these 45-second lung buster hits. because that just gives irritants the chance to deposit on the lungs, and you don't actually get more THC. People say, I feel higher, but in fact, if you just held your breath longer, even without smoke in there, you would also feel a little bit higher. So don't overinterpret that.
Oh, okay. The next question here, interesting one here. When smoking with people using glass pipes, does it help to flash a lighter flame on the hidden end to kill unseeable germs? And I suppose seeable germs, too.
In fact, I would recommend everybody do the sort of chill 'em type thing where you breathe in to your fist. So, yeah, a flame on glass definitely kills germs, but it usually takes markedly longer than most people are willing to hold a flame there. Mm-hmm. And if you will do people the courtesy of putting your hand around there and breathing in through your hand, you're much less likely to spread germs that way.
Okay, yeah, and I would think that by the time that you had had that flame there on the hidden end long enough to kill the germs, you'd have heated up that end too hot to smoke out of.
Exactly. And in fact, even like boiling water, which is something that's often, you know, put as this big germ killer, it takes about 20 minutes in boiling water to really kill germs. And obviously you don't want to deal with that kind of heat immediately afterwards.
Yeah. How about the use of the alcohol swabs on the end?
Alcohol swabs are astoundingly good at killing germs, and even these cornball things that a lot of people are using on their hands this time of year, those instant hand sanitizers, are surprisingly effective in killing a lot of germs.
Hmm. A hand sanitizer to sanitize the end of a pipe. That's kind of an interesting idea. All right, let's take a look at some other questions. Cannabis Cure wants to know, does cannabis work well with immunosuppressants for Crohn's disease? It says the last time that he used the immunosuppressants without cannabis, his symptoms got 10 times worse. So is there a synergistic effect between the immunosuppressant drugs for Crohn's and the use of cannabis?
The funny thing is these immunosuppressants tend to create some of the symptoms that cannabis is great for combating. So if you're experiencing some of the nausea and just general digestive discomfort, those CB2 receptors all along the digestive tract seem to respond wonderfully to cannabis, and it'll counteract that. They don't necessarily work any better, but they don't work any worse. I know there's been a lot of harping about, oh, cannabis hurts immune function. And, yeah, if you've got a single white blood cell in a petri dish and beat the hell out of it with a ton of cannabis, of course it's not going to do so well. But in humans, this is not an issue.
Yeah, you know, I've always wondered about that, too, because that's one of the things the opponents bring up, is that it somehow hurts our immune systems to smoke cannabis. But I can't imagine that doctors would be recommending cannabis for AIDS patients if that were true.
And, in fact, Don Abrams has some data to suggest that even AIDS patients do not show immunosuppression from cannabis use. It's just simply not the kind of dosages we were seeing in those trials that they were doing in the laboratories with single cells or even small animals.
Okay. Question now coming in from Scooby Drew. I like that name. Scooby Drew wants to know, how well would cannabis work on cerebral palsy, specifically the muscle spasms and pain?
As it turns out, we don't have a ton of cases, but there are a couple of published case studies on both cerebral palsy and Tourette's showing, in one case, a pretty dramatic improvement in just lack of muscle tremor anymore. And that can mean all the difference if you've got to simply do things like write your name or sign something or, you know, keep your hands still while you're doing some careful work. And it's like night and day for at least a subset of folks with CP.
Okay. Another question coming from Stereotype. It wants to know, if you know the name of the synthetic cannabinoid that is used, that gives you all the effects of cannabis except for the high of cannabis. He says something about it not affecting the neurons and gives the abbreviation URB, but he thinks there's some number that comes after that. Does that ring a bell?
So there was an HU210 that was shown to have some of those properties, but it's probably not without its psychoactive effects. And then there's a new paper out showing this that somebody emailed me, and I would have to double-check that. But again, it's these collection of numbers and letters that I'm a little disappointed by, because they're putting so much effort into this, let's find the cannabinoid that has no mood-enhancing properties, when I think the mood-enhancing properties of cannabis are really part of what makes treatment good.
Yeah, exactly. What's wrong with sick people feeling better? Exactly. You know, a tangent to that question, we're seeing a lot of states now that are rushing to enact these bans on the synthetic, what they're calling synthetic pot, which is really spice and K2 and all these things that are supposedly incense that are sprayed with the synthetic cannabinoid JWH-018. And just the other day on our Fox News station, we had a report of some 24-year-old girl talking about how she went into convulsions and had all these terrible, terrible reactions to the spice and that it should be banned. If these people really are having these terrible, terrible reactions, is it from the JWH-018 or from the constituents that is being sprayed upon?
It's curious because JWH-108 is something that we're still really in the dark about. It is definitely stronger than THC. It hits that CB1 receptor a lot harder than good old, green plant. And so we're just completely unknown on this one. The fact that it sent somebody into convulsions does kind of surprise me, because I don't usually think of cannabinoid stimulation as doing anything but helping people when it comes to seizures. And it's unclear what they're spraying these on. So you can put this on damn near any kind of potpourri, call it an incense, somebody smokes it, and then who knows what they're getting. And so I feel like this is, in some ways, a product of just bad chemistry, if you will. And then, it kind of freaks me out that we've got a plant with a 5,000-year history of safety, but because it's illegal, people are turning to a chemical that we know nothing about, which is legal, and maybe putting themselves at risk. We just don't know, because we haven't done enough research on these synthetics yet.
Yeah, and of course, one of the major reasons people are turning to this, we have one of our chatters saying the Marines love it. And, the military folks, people with jobs, people that are drug tested, know that these synthetic cannabinoids aren't being screened for on these urinalysis screens. So right there, we have another example of this drug testing regime leading people to more dangerous choices. Is there any word on the horizon here about them testing for this JWH-018, or is it even possible?
The metabolites for JWH-108 are getting investigated, and there are actually two potential metabolite tests, so that people will be able to screen for these relatively soon. It looks like it's going to be a little more expensive than folks might want to deal with. But yes, your point about prohibition leading us to further dangers is really well taken. I mean, you go back to the old days when alcohol was prohibited and suddenly people are drinking wood alcohol and going blind. This isn't quite that extreme, but the parallel is very apt in that why would we turn to something so potentially dangerous if, in fact, we've got a safe product right here?
Exactly. We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany, one of America's leading researchers in marijuana science, history, and culture. Taking your questions on the chat line and by phone if you want to call in at 971-533-7111. Our latest question from Mr. Smokeazip asks, sometimes when I smoke, I get a hay fever. Is this just from the irritation from the smoke or something else?
Hay fever is pretty complicated, but odds are high if you would use a vaporizer, you're only going to get cannabinoids rather than any of the other potential things that are contained in smoke, and that would be a good way to sidestep the potential for hay fever that you might be getting from, say, using a pipe.
Okay. Question from Apparatus Beats. He'd like to know, can you explain how cannabis can generate new brain cells? Do you think this could help the effects of drugs like ecstasy?
As it turns out, combining ecstasy and cannabis is still something we're all a little confused about. At least one data set suggests that leads to worse neuropsych functions down the line, particularly in folks who've done this 10 or more times. It doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about what a valuable neuroprotectant antioxidant THC is, but that's at least something that's showing up in one of the data sets that's out there. As far as THC generating new brain cells, it's not quite that direct, but we are seeing improved growth in at least young brain cells in certain Petri dish style lab experiments that provide cannabinoids. But again, I'm not recommending, you know, cannabis for folks whose brains are still developing, because we've also got data to suggest that's just not a good thing to do.
Okay. We have time for a couple more questions here. One coming in from Zippity Don't. Very simple question. Does cannabis use raise blood pressure?
As it turns out, no. Cannabis use tends to decrease blood pressure. And if you've ever seen anybody get really high, stand up fast, and then have to sit down fast, that's actually because of a drop in blood pressure. It's not generally thought of as a good, you know, antihypertensive medication, because the effect just doesn't last very long. But I did get a postcard from the UK recently from a guy who says that's pretty much what he does to keep his blood pressure in check. He uses an orally administered elixir, basically, so that he doesn't have a high dose ever, but his blood pressure stays under control this way and doesn't have some of the negative side effects associated with some of the other antihypertensive drugs, particularly some of the sexual dysfunction.
Okay. Question from Hempster420 says, got a new script for baclofen. Really, they just make these words up. Baclofen. And he was wondering what effect this will have in concert with cannabis use, and whether or not he could just substitute it for smoking a bit of weed to relieve muscle spasms. I guess the main question here is this baclofen drug, what is it, and what would be the interaction of using it with cannabis?
As it turns out, if we understand how baclofen is working, and I think it's been oversimplified in some of its presentation, it's not using the same route that cannabis uses in order to relieve muscle spasms. The drug has some cornball side effects in a subset of folks, and it definitely works, but it's not the kind of thing you want to lean on heavily. If a small dose of cannabis will do the trick, I actually feel like, you know, we've got a longer history with that, but baclofen doesn't have some kind of outrageous safety profile like some of the other old muscle spasm drugs that we had, say, in the 1970s.
Okay, Blunted Eric would like to know, as far as the respiratory system goes, is it better to forego inhaling the burning plant matter and smoke hash instead? Is there a difference, as far as lung health goes, between smoking pot or hash oil?
The clincher is dosage, of course, and generally hash and hash oil have a higher concentration of THC, so you need less total inhalation in order to get the basically release from symptoms or subjective effects you're looking for, so that can be adaptive. Unfortunately, people get hash and really love it and want to smoke it all, and then, of course, you're sidestepping the opportunity to both save money and decrease your exposure to respiratory irritants.
I don't know anyone like that.
I have a question for you, Dr. Mitch. Does my tummy hurt right now because of those mushrooms I took last night? Because Russ got me sick.
I have to tell you that mushrooms do wreak havoc on the digestive tract. So
yeah.
I cannot recommend them for those with any kind of GI problems.
Okay, Russ, I don't have to hit you there.
I'm glad I'm off the hook for that one. Okay, two more questions and we'll have to call it here. So thanks, everyone, for getting your questions in on the chat. If we didn't get to them today, you can send them in by email at 420research@gmail.com, or just visit us every Wednesday, except next Wednesday, when Dr. Mitch joins us. We answer these questions live. So here's a question that's kind of interesting, anonymous question. Like catnip for cats, is there some people who just don't get high smoking cannabis? A guy I work with swears that he has tried it a dozen times and never gotten high.
There's a subset of folks who don't seem to respond or don't seem to respond well, but when you query them repeatedly, you find out their ability to inhale and hold a hit is generally not, shall we say, superior in this domain. So a number of people who say, you know, I used it four times and nothing has happened, and then you find out basically they don't know how to get any of the vapor into their lungs.
I see. It's like President Clinton. He smoked it, but he didn't inhale.
And, of course, obviously didn't get high.
Okay. Our final question comes from Arctic Bob, another drug interaction question regarding cannabis and soma muscle relaxers. Any troubles with that?
I have to admit that one is a lot of fun, but we don't have any data one way or another on that. I think the clincher on that is keeping doses as low as possible. Only use this to alleviate the actual symptom. Do not do this just for the recreational properties.
Okay. Yeah, powerful drugs we're talking about there. Thank you so much, Dr. Mitch, for joining us once again here on Cannabis Science, and I guess we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Looking forward to it. Bye now.
All right, folks, coming up next, we got some radical ranting. I've got to talk about the various ways people try to push the envelope with regard to the selling of marijuana in medical marijuana states. Also, make sure you stay tuned for Hour 2 in Toker Talk Radio. We're going to go into a little bit more depth on the No on Prop 19 people, a couple of really interesting websites that make me chuckle, and also the story of an Oregon multiple sclerosis patient who was abused by police over his legal use of medical marijuana. It's Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation. Stick around. We're right back.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical. All right, let's open up here for some ranting. I have had a work day today. You know, I do this show for Normal Show Live. I do the podcasting. I do the blogging. I fly across the country. I speak in front of people. I would do all that for free. The paycheck that I make for Normal is acting as Normal's outreach coordinator. And in that job, I have to deal with all the Normal chapters across the country, which can be quite a disparate job because we're talking about people running chapters in Utah and Alabama, as well as people running chapters in Colorado and California. And it can be a great difference in what they can get away with and what they can do with regards to their operations. Well, my headache for this week has to do with the operations of chapters in medical marijuana states. And when it comes to the remuneration for medical marijuana, buying and selling marijuana, it's different from marijuana state to marijuana state. California, you can have the collective system. In Colorado, you got these dispensaries, and Montana's got something going on similar to that. But in the state of Oregon, where I'm coming to you from, there is no buying or selling of marijuana, even medical marijuana, even between people who are registered patients. In fact, the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act's pretty clear that a person responsible for a marijuana grow site can be reimbursed, but they can only be reimbursed for supplies and utilities, right? So, like, if it cost me X to get the soil and the water and the lighting and the electricity and et cetera, I can get the receipts for all of that and figure out how much I produced, and you can reimburse me for those expense costs. But the patient is the person who always owns the medicine. That's written into the law. The medicine, the marijuana, the plants, regardless of who's growing them, they belong to the patient. So there's no possible way that a patient can be spending money to buy something that they already own. Okay, but this loophole is something that some folks are trying to drive a Mack truck through with regard to the buying and selling of marijuana. And again, I don't have a moral problem with that. In fact, that's what I'm fighting for here at Normal, is for people to be able to buy and sell marijuana if they are adults. The problem comes in that we have asked the public to trust us on this medical marijuana issue, that it's all medical, and we have asked, you know, we have gotten these concessions from them as far as how much we can grow and how much we can possess. And they don't want to feel like we're taking advantage of them. And situations like this, I believe, make them feel that way. And it's a story that I come from the Grants Pass Daily Courier, yesterday's front page news, that says medical marijuana supply outlet up and running in Grants Pass. Okay, so this is down in Southern Oregon, and the people talking about that talk about how the patients can go in and if they can go in and get free medicine, basically. Now, that's something that's fine. We've got normal chapters that do that, that collect donations of medicine and then distribute it to needy patients. That's something to be admired, absolutely. But where this goes off the rails is where they talk about how, and these are quotes from some of the people involved that were interviewed in this story. One patient who said she had to show her medical marijuana card. They have brownies, all kinds of edibles, from salsa to cookies. The woman customer said she got a quarter ounce of marijuana and gave a $70 donation, the suggested amount. Okay, so no, we're not buying and selling marijuana. We just have marijuana that we give to people. And then those people look up on a board that has a list of weights and prices and stuff that is just merely a suggested donation. And so they, out of the kindness of their heart, give $70 for that quarter ounce of marijuana, which we wouldn't give them unless they gave us a donation. But we're not buying and selling marijuana. No. Like Judge Judy says, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. What you're doing is buying and selling marijuana. And look, I'm cool with that. I'm fine with that. I'm just not cool with that with Normal's name on it. Okay? Normal is a federal 501c3 tax exempt organization. And the only thing the federal government needs to be able to pull that tax exempt status and to wreck Normal on a national scale is to have a high profile case of one of its affiliated chapters buying and selling marijuana contrary to the law and engaging in a major federal conspiracy to do so. So I take it a little personally here, as I'm here to defend Normal's name, brand, and reputation, when people are using that contrary to our own stated guidelines. It's not like this is a surprise. When you want to form a Normal chapter, there's a series of rules that we have listed, and one of those rules is that chapters that are formed in medical marijuana states, I'll pull up the exact word here. It's right up here, normal.org/chapters. You can go there and find the join a chapter or start a new chapter link, and you'll see exactly how to do it and what the rules are, and listed right there in point 6A, because of Normal's federal tax exempt status, no entity distributing medical marijuana for compensation, whether a cooperative, collective, or some other entity, may serve as a Normal chapter, nor may the Normal name be used by any entity distributing medical marijuana for compensation. And yet, we've got these people down here, $70 for a quarter ounce of medicine. That's $280 per ounce, which, by the way, according to, what was that, Price My Weed, Weed Price, what was that website?
Priceofweed.com.
Priceofweed.com. Just happens to be the average black market price of marijuana. What a coincidence that the suggested donation would match what the black market price is. I'm stunned. Here's another patient, a second customer, who specifies that he obtained a few grams of marijuana and gave a $10 donation per gram. Let me think. There's 28 grams in an ounce of marijuana and it costs $10 a gram. What do you know? That works out to the black market price again. And he says, quote, I was given a list of suggested prices, donations. He said four other people visit the outlet, blah, blah, blah. Another customer said he was going to buy a marijuana plant. I'm going to ask them for a clone, a plant, so I can grow my own, said the customer, who planned to donate $20 or $25, whatever makes a smile on their face and my face. $20 for a marijuana clone, right? And I've heard this so many times from so many different areas. I get this from the Colorado chapters, California chapters, Oregon chapters, places where there's this legal gray area about the private buying and selling of medical marijuana. I get arguments like, oh, we're not selling cannabis in these medicated brownies. We are giving the cannabis away for free, but we're charging for the flour, the sugar, the water, the chocolate, the eggs, and the talent of the chef. I'm telling you, that's some pretty damn expensive brownie mix when it comes up to $20 a brownie, isn't it? Yeah, but we're not buying and selling cannabis. No. These ideas, these loopholes, these ways of getting around things, I love that we're pushing the envelope, people, but you cannot do it under the Normal name. You cannot buy and sell cannabis. When money leaves a person's hand and cannabis comes back, It's buying and selling. You can't say that it's a donation if you cannot get the medicine without the donation. You cannot say that it's a reimbursement for expenses when nobody is showing receipts for expenses, when nobody's calculating the expenses, and when you're charging a flat rate. That's another thing that I've heard a couple of times is we'll charge a flat rate of $100 per ounce, for marijuana. Well, that's great, but how is the expense for marijuana coming up to be an exact $100 per ounce when one guy is growing it outside for very low cost, another guy is growing it inside for great cost? And how is that supposed to work out? I don't understand it. But we got to run here, so we're running out of time on the show. Thanks for joining us here. We appreciate all of you tuning in to Normal Show Live. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We're going to be talking about that Oregon medical marijuana patient abused, multiple sclerosis patient abused by the local police, even as he proves to them he's a legitimate patient, and they recognize that fact. Also, a couple of really interesting no on Prop 19 sites. They're really funny. They crack me up. All that Toker Talk Radio coming next. For Ganja John and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.